It's not their little hands or their little feet or even their self-satisfied smiles. No. It's their eyes. When we construct dolls of wood and plastic and paper, we finish with something looking back at us, part of us. It's like it stares back with the same window to the soul that we ourselves possess. And sometimes they do. Today on Snap Judgment, we proudly present Welcome to the Dollhouse. Featuring classic Snap Judgment stories of the season as part of our countdown to the all-new Spooked 7. Listen when I tell you. Turn on the lights, lock all the doors, and do not, under any circumstances, listen alone. For our first story, when Allie Standish was a child, she arrived home in a wheelchair one night after getting surgery on both of her legs, and she was shocked to see her grandmother waiting in the living room with a smile.
I had never seen anything like the dollhouse. It was a wooden Queen Anne. It was painted a deep shade of cornflower blue and had this cream trimming. It looked so delicious that you just kind of wanted to eat it like icing. When I realized that this house was not only mine, but my grandmother had made the house for me by hand, all by herself, I just remember being blown away. It was actually quite a shock that it had come from her and that she had made it. I think by that time, a lot of the joy had just been kind of sucked out of her. And that was one of the times that she seemed to be truly happy. She never did anything that was completely selfless. You know, when she gave you something, she wanted something back. In addition to the dollhouse, she gave me a scrapbook. And the scrapbook was full of pictures of her making the dollhouse. It was her saying, here's my documentation of how hard I worked on this project. The dollhouse came complete with 6 plastic dolls. There was a mother and a father and a little boy and a little girl. So it was like my family. And then there was a baby. They were all fine. They were all just kind of typical plastic dolls that you would see in a dollhouse. The more distinctive doll was the grandmother. She had this full-length blue floral dress that was almost like a nightgown. And she had silver long hair. Her eyebrows were arched in this way that made her expression just look very malicious. Because I was in a wheelchair and I was recovering, I couldn't be outside and I couldn't go to school. So I was bored and I was itchy under my casts. And I was also scared because even though, you know, the surgeons tell you that things went fine, when you can't walk for 6 weeks, you do wonder, you know, what happens if they take the casts off and I've lost my ability to walk, you know. So for me, the dollhouse, it was a way for me to escape. My mom and I would shop for mirrors that were the size of my thumb and china cabinets that I could hold in the palm of my hand and newspapers for the dining room table and plastic apple pies for the kitchen windowsill. So I had a sleepover one night in the spring. My girlfriends were sleeping in the playroom and I got up in the night to go to the bathroom. And that room had these big skylights, and so on nights when the moon was out, it was very bright. The dollhouse was kind of illuminated, and I just glanced over at it and kind of stopped. I could clearly see the shape of each of the dolls. A man, a woman, a girl, a boy, a baby. Except they were not where I had left them the last time I had played with them. The father was sitting on the couch across from the little TV, and the mother was in the bathroom with the baby, and the boy and the girl were in their beds, kind of turned away from one another. Only the grandmother was left at the table where I had left her. and she was just kind of staring out at me. It creeped me out. But, you know, you don't immediately jump from that to, my dolls are moving on their own. I just figured that one of the girls had moved them when I wasn't watching. But then when I asked the next morning, nobody admitted to having touched them. I just kind of, you know, went about my regular life, figured that if I ignored it, it would stop. But instead, things just... One night, as soon as I walked into the room, something felt really off to me. Something was telling me, do not look at that dollhouse. Do not look at that dollhouse. But I couldn't help myself. This time, the father was positioned at the dining room table. He had his face down, and his tie had been tied around and around his neck. The baby was face down in the kitchen sink. The mother's head was plunged into the open oven, and the little boy was upstairs smothering the little girl with her pillow. And the only doll that didn't seem to be dying was the grandmother. And the grandmother sat at the head of the dining room table, and she had this evil smile spread across her face. And I remember thinking that this felt personal, that this felt like some kind of revenge. I was shocked. I screamed and I ran downstairs and got my parents and told them what had happened, and they were a bit bemused. And I think we all kind of decided together that this had to be my brother playing a joke. So they went and kind of told him off, and he told them right back off and said that he had had nothing to do with it. I never told my grandmother about any of it. I didn't want to call her and say, thank you for the beautiful dollhouse. By the way, your dolls are terrifying me. So no, I never spoke with my grandmother about any of it. So I was really excited when my brother was leaving for summer camp, because it meant that things would finally calm down and things with the dollhouse would stop. And that's just not how things went. They were lined up on their backs on the living room floor, all of them except for my grandmother. She was crouched above the father. She had a butcher's knife in her hand, pointed at his throat, poised to just slit them all right down the line. Her chin was tilted up, and she was leering at me. I mean, I had run out of explanations. The only people who had been in the house were me, my mother, and my father. And so I wanted to get the dolls away from me. My eyes kind of fell on this blanket chest that we kept in the playroom. And it was a big, heavy black chest with a heavy lid. And so I took the dolls and stuck them in there at the bottom. I slammed the lid shut. It was some time later that I had a sleepover at my house. I needed more blankets. And, you know, I thought, enough time has passed and surely I can look at these dolls and not be afraid of them anymore. And so I opened up the chest and I dug out the dolls. As I lifted my arm to close the chest, I looked at the underside of the lid, which was wood, and the entire underside of the lid was covered in tiny scratch marks, as if a very small person had been clawing to get out. It freaked me out. So at that point, I whirled into motion, and I grabbed the dolls, and I went downstairs, found newspaper, and wrapped them all up. I kept all of the family together, except for the grandmother. Her, I wrapped separately. I ran up to the attic, and I threw them into the far corners. And I threw her into the opposite corner. I didn't want her to be able to hurt them anymore. You know, as silly as that sounds, I didn't want her to be able to do that anymore. I didn't want her to have that power. And so I felt like she deserved to, you know, rot by herself. that marked the end of my thinking about the dollhouse. And I didn't really start thinking about it again until my grandmother passed away. When she was a couple of days away from death, she called my mother in to her bedside and she said, "I want you to know that I forgive your father. I just can't remember what for." The night after she died, I went to her home with my mom and we spent the night there. I think my mom really wanted to inhabit that space. So she slept in the room that she had slept in as a child. And that left me with my grandmother's room where she had slept for 50 years and, you know, shared a bed with my grandfather back when, you know, a lot of fighting and drinking. And my grandmother, she refused to be in the same room as my grandfather for the entire rest of her life. And so I was sitting in this room on her bed and thinking about how that dollhouse came from the bowels of this unhappy place. And so I was really panicky. I got under the covers and I slowly closed my eyes. And once I closed my eyes, I felt safe. It was as if for the first time I felt not in a vice grip. Like if she was there at all, she was wrapping her arms around me. I started to feel differently about her after that night. When we came across the photo album that she had made of her making the dollhouse, when I was flipping through the book, I realized that there was this whole other side to this person that I had never had the chance to know. However troubled she was, this was the best that she could do to love me at that point in her life. Yeah, I mean, the only other thing I can do to make amends is to go up to the attic one day where the dollhouse has sat for many years collecting dust and let another child, you know, if I ever have a daughter, let it be the source of happiness that I think my grandmother had intended it to be for me. Different dolls, though.
Thank you, Allie, for sharing that story. Allie is a children's author, currently living in Cambridge, England, and her debut children's novel, The Ethan I Was Before, is available everywhere. Rest assured, there are no creep grandma dolls involved. And by the way, if you want to see what the dollhouse looks like, we'll have a picture on our website, snapjudgment.org. Snap Judgment, welcome to the dollhouse. We'll return in just a moment. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Snap Judgment, the Welcome to the Dollhouse special, part of our countdown to the all-new Spooked 7. Our next story comes to us from a Snap Judgment listener, Maria Sarator Gunter. But this story didn't come easy. In order to tell this tale, you have to first journey through the darkness. Maria's story is performed by our own Julia DeWitt.
My birthday is the day after Christmas, so I get twice as many presents as everyone else. But my favorites are always the one I get from my aunt. For years, she's bought me collectible dolls. And now, at the end of high school, my collection is massive. But I'm still excited to add another one. I hold and touch the box from my aunt leading up to my birthday. I want to open it early so badly. I'm normally really patient about gifts, but this package is different. It's calling to me. Finally, Christmas is over and my birthday arrives. I remove the wrapping, open the box, slowly peel back the protective foam, and there's this doll. My mother, sister, and father, puzzled by my reaction, all want to see this doll. I remove it from the box and place him on the table in front of us. It's a male figure with a broad chest, maybe 18 inches tall. wears gray satin pantaloons and a pink satin open-collared shirt. The exposed legs and arms are stark white, each leading to dark black hooves instead of feet and hands. The porcelain face is that of a horse, with blazing green eyes ringed in yellow with flecks of red. On top of his head is not a hat or a crown, but a glimmering, twisted horn of silver. It's a beastly unicorn prince. We look at it stunned, and it stares back at us. From every angle, it seems to be looking at us with that menacing glare. Finally, my mother breaks the silence. "Put it away, so we can have cake." I place it on a shelf across the room, and we proceed with the cake, and the festive mood is restored. And then, it's the mirror in the guest room. The mirror is mounted to the wall shared with the shelf on which the doll sits, and it's fallen off the wall. The mirror has simply broken to pieces. Not knowing what else to do, we clean up the mess and just go to bed. I take the doll with me to my room and put it on my dresser. That night, I wake up in the middle of the night. My bedroom has become so cold. It's late December, but this is Houston, Texas, so the temperatures at night rarely dip below 40 degrees Fahrenheit. I step out of my room, and I'm surprised to find that on the other side of the door, the temperature is much warmer. So I grab my pillow and a blanket, and I go to sleep on the couch in the family room. I'm just about to drift off to sleep when I hear a noise coming from the kitchen. It's like the click-clack tapping of feet. Little feet, and lots of them. I convince myself maybe it's a bug outside or some water dripping from the tap, but it persists with an irregular pattern. Whatever's making this noise is just steps from me, which means that it can see me. I'm so frightened that I can't move, and I start to cry. My mom hears me, and she comes out to the living room. "Why are you crying? And what are you doing out here?" I tell her about the cold in my room and the sounds of little feet walking across the tiles in the kitchen. She clearly doesn't believe me, so she turns off the light and lies down next to me to prove I'm just imagining things. And immediately, the clattering starts again. She grips my arm, slowly turns on the light, and then she goes to the kitchen. Nothing's there. She stays up reading next to me the rest of the night with the lights on. The next day, my mother calls her sister to ask about the doll. All my aunt says is, "It called to me." It caught her eye, but she wasn't convinced it was the right gift for me. She went home that evening without a gift at all and had a dream about that doll. So she returned to the shop the next day to buy it for me. I decide that the doll has to go. I take it outside to our concrete slab of a patio to smash it. The first strike on the concrete, I brace for the flying shards of porcelain, but nothing happens. So I strike it again. Nothing. I'm sure a third time will do it, but then, still, nothing. Shocked, I turn its face towards me, and the red-rimmed eyes meet my own. And then I feel something come over me, but it isn't fear, more like an acceptance of the doll's evil. And then almost without thinking, I take it back into the house and leave it on the kitchen counter, just lying on its back with those wild eyes staring up at the ceiling. That night, the temperature in my bedroom is normal, but I'm still too scared to sleep. I only finally fall asleep when I take the nightlight from the bathroom and place it on the wall next to my bed. And then suddenly, I'm awake again. That noise, the click, clack, tapping of the little feet are back. And I can hear it getting louder, closer. I pull the covers tight around me and repeat to myself, "It's just your imagination, it's just your imagination, it's just your imagination." And then I see a light. A light so bright it's blinding and it's pouring into my room through the cracks around, above, and below my door. I try to turn the lamp on, but I can't move. I try to call out, but as wide as I open my mouth and as hard as I try to scream, only air escapes my lungs. No sound comes out at all. I'm paralyzed with terror when the door begins to shake loudly like someone's violently trying to get in. The light's getting brighter. I need to shield my eyes, but I'm too afraid to look away. And then, like a bolt of lightning, the shaking suddenly stops. At first, I still can't move, but then as the tension slowly recedes, I smell fire. My muscles relax, and I reach for the lamp. Cautiously, I creep out of my door and open it. Can see a warm glow from the family room. I call out, "Who's there?" My father's voice returns sternly, "You should be in bed." I approach him in the family room. He started a fire in the fireplace and is stoking it. He puts his arm around me. "You can go to sleep now," he says, gently, as he kisses my head. I peer into the fireplace and I see it. The last smoldering remains of the doll.
Thank you, Maria Sarator-Gunter, for living and sharing your story with The Snap. The original score is by Renzel Goriel and Davy Kim. As for me, I plan to lock up any and all dolls before laying my head down to sleep. And Snappers, understand, nobody loves the season of mystery like Snap Judgment does. We're coming to you with 4 Snap Spook Classic remixes before dropping the all-new Spooked 7. But I'll give you a little preview. Goes like this.
Be afraid.